Good morning and welcome to another Tuesday edition of Community Conversations / Morning Show, kind of this hybrid thing we're going to figure out by year's end, aren't we, Julie?
Yes, we are, Phil. We don't really know what to name it, but by year's end, we should have it figured out.
It's ever changing. We'll have a new Delta variant of the morning show by January or something like that.
Yes, we will.
So how's your weekend been? What did you do? How is the early darkness setting in after four?
Yes, absolutely. It is setting in. And as you know, we all adjust to shorter days and a time change and those kind of things. And I'm thinking about our recent interview of Dear Vember with Northwest Auto Body and the food bank, and thinking we need to really be keeping an eye out for animals as much as we ever have. So let's bring that out as a reminder.
Yes, we do. I spent part of my rainy Saturday picking up trash with the Lake Pontarea water keepers around the beach. And it was really heartening to see on this gray, dismal, cold, rainy day, almost 100 people turn out to help pick up trash around the shoreline. That was heartening.
That's a great description. I'm glad that you're able to make it.
Yes. So we're going to switch now to two guests who are familiar faces on radio. They are familiar to our audience, who, if they tuned in early this summer, spring, listen to us talk with Justine Murray and Matt Connery about the time pending hike of the Idaho Centennial Trail to raise awareness and funds for the Ethan Murray Fund. And here they are, fresh off the trail. None of us are willing to let summer go completely. And we're here to hear more about their experiences on the Idaho Centennial Trail and how the Ethan Murray Fund is progressing. And so for new listeners, let's take a little deeper dive into your backgrounds. And Justine, maybe you can start. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do here in Sandpoint, and how it is that this hike came about.
Yeah. Hi, Phil. So my name is Justine Murray. I'm the owner of La Chic Boutique, 8 years in business now in downtown Sandpoint. I've lived here about 16 years. I have a daughter, Cora, who lives in Sandpoint, is 25 and works at Evans Brothers. We love the mountains here and hiking. And this year we started in March, the Ethan Murray Fund, which we'll talk more about a little bit later.
Yes. Hi, my name is Matt. I'm a lifelong resident. I was an electrician here for a number of years. And now after the hike, I'm kind of in transition and also working on the Ethan Murray Fund. So.
Well, welcome back to the show. And tell us about the Idaho Centennial Trail itself.
The Idaho Centennial Trail is roughly 900 miles long from the Nevada border to Canada, almost Canada. And we hiked 775 miles and we whitewater rafted 75 miles on the Middle Fork of the Salmon.
What a fabulous trip. And so where did you start, and tell us about the continuity in the middle, and where did you end?
So we started June 26th at the Idaho-Nevada border near Murphy Hot Springs. And we finished September 19th at Upper Priest Falls and Priest Lake.
Fabulous. Now, Matt, you alluded to some route decisions that were different than what's the line that's on the map. Tell us a little bit about what your deviations were and why you made them.
We had to reroute a lot because of the fires in Idaho, partially through on the Middle Fork of the Salmon. We had an opportunity to go on a raft and talk about more of that later. But there's so many fires in the way. Each section, there'd be two or three fires, and they'd be on the trail or near their trail where they'd shut down the whole forest. So and we'd had to jump off quite a bit, roughly 300 miles or so.
He'd have to make new maps and kind of put together, you know, different routes where we'd be on, you know, some Forest Service roads, some other trails.
Yes. The public libraries in towns are amazing to be able to go and get that information, not just maps, but be able to get online and figure it out.
I think that's
quite a process to understand where were fires and where you could reroute. I mean, that had to just be a constant concern.
Oh, yeah, every day. Yes. When you're hiking in the section and it's 130 miles long and you don't have cell service, you don't get fire updates. You don't know what's going to be happening in, you know, 4 days from now. If the wind kicks up and the fire's jumped way bigger. So sometimes it was safer to try to go around them.
Yeah, it's one of the experiences I think that unifies most long-distance hikers is that the trip never goes exactly as planned. In fact, never goes as planned. And building in that adaptability and learning how to be nimble and quick is a vital learning lesson. But sounds like you guys really had that to the extreme. I think in the lead up to the interview, Matt, you were calling it the trail of no expectations.
Yes, I did not coin that. Yes, that is true. Well, and we also, other thru hikers had called this, if you are on the trail, if you're off the trail, it's so, how did that go?
They say like you are the trail. It's like trail of no expectations.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sometimes there is one, sometimes there isn't.
Yeah. So. You can get lost. The trail disappears. If you're walking, you are the trail.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so in this way, the Idaho, this trail is different from other long distance trails like the Pacific Crest Trail or maybe the Appalachian Trail, because it isn't fully, it's not as easy to follow as other long distance hiking trails.
Yeah, it has more options. And in that way, it's similar maybe to the Continental Divide Trail, which I'd almost proffer that no two people have ever hiked the exact same route. There's so many potential variations and needs to be creative and obstacles and challenges as you encountered.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah,
there's a lot of bushwhacking.
And they're doing some trail work. I mean, in each section, they did just mark the desert section. So now there's trail markers your whole way through the desert section. That was super helpful. I believe Tom Helmer, who works out of Boise for the state, he is part of that project where it's like one of his many titles, the ICT coordinator. But he went through the desert, drove through, and put markers all the way through, which was so helpful. So we're hoping to see more of that or maybe help with that.
Yeah.
At some point.
At least on our end up here.
Yeah.
We're gonna come back to more about the trail experience, but it's always helpful to set that stage with why did you hike the trail? Tell us a little more about the genesis of the hike.
Okay, so I've been wanting to do this hike for the last 3 years, and I've wanted to do something to raise awareness about mental health and the lack of resources in our area. So I kind of had it in the works, and then I had a tragedy strike 2 years ago in May. My 25-year-old son, Ethan, was killed in Spokane Valley, Washington, during a mental health crisis. Ethan suffered from schizophrenia, which is a mental illness. It's a brain disorder. And which for some that don't know, it's basically you have disorganized thinking, speech, behaviors, sometimes delusional. And so getting help for Ethan, scooting back a little, was very difficult in this area. So it's something I wanted to do. And definitely, like when this tragedy happened, I just felt like I had to do it. There was like, I was going to do this. I was going to help other people that were in this situation, like my son, because I wouldn't want anyone to go through anything like this.
So it's a big undertaking, the hike on its own. And the journey with Ethan's tragedy itself is also a big undertaking, and yet you've weaved them together. Tell us how that made things either more hard, more challenging, or in some ways, maybe easier is not the right word, more satisfying.
Yeah, I guess, it offered a lot of things, Phil, honestly. One part of choosing this trail, and especially after Ethan passed, it even was more apparent why I wanted to do this trail, is I wanted the challenge. I wanted to find a trail that wasn't easy by any means, which no through hikes are. This one definitely has less support than other trails. So you are kind of out there. It's more rugged. It's there's spots where there are no trails. And I guess I wanted to feel like what it's like to struggle, and not know, where you're going to sleep, what your next meal's coming from, just to have that challenge. I've never been challenged like that, just so I could sort of feel like what Ethan went through to a little extent.
And also like with that too is it's very humbling in situations when we're walking or taking a break. When we do see other people, you kind of got to feel a little bit about when he was homeless or because we look homeless at times, and you know, we're in the shade of a pit toilet all day and people come and go, or you walk into a town. And because it's not one of the bigger trails, people don't recognize that you're a thru hiker. You might look like you're homeless and you're walking into the town and people look at you. You know, we haven't showered in 13 days. And so we don't smell very good. And you walk into a store and people look at you and kind of, you know, and judgmental.
It's truly a fine line between being homeless and being a long distance hiker sometimes anyway. Definitions almost. I think one of the things I've discovered in my own journeys and in talking to other long distance hikers is that whether we go out purposely to reflect on the things in our lives or we don't, if you're walking essentially alone or with a partner, just a small number, for many days on end, you can't help but reflect on things. There's a four-letter word we can't use, so you can't get away from your own stuff, I'll say. It's there and you're processing it. That had to be part of it for you. I'd love to hear a little bit more about how that impacted you both.
Yeah, you know, definitely for me, the grieving process of being on the trail, feeling all the feelings. I mean, there's so much silence in nature. You really get time to like process more than you do in your busy lives. I feel like in daily life, we have so many tasks, so many meetings, so many things going on that you don't get to just take that moment for yourself and like process what you're truly feeling. For me, definitely being on the trail offered this moment or days actually of just being with that process of grieving, which I hadn't had since Ethan passed, even though it had been 2 years. You know, we're told to get right back in it or go back to work, and you know, you get less calls and less things. So then you're just kind of sitting with yourself and in this, all this distraction. So being able to do the trail and having that moment was definitely like really huge for me.
I think for me, it was just being humble all the time. It's just so amazing out there. It's hard. It is a struggle, but it's a different kind of struggle in life. And it just is so simple compared to our life that we have right now. So it is definitely, it allows you to take a breath and kind of reboot, unplug. And I'm so thankful for that.
Mm-hmm. So I would almost, the word that comes to mind for me is like a pilgrimage for you all. Did that word ever come up for you?
A little bit, Julie, I would say, you know, feeling like I was honoring Ethan and also grieving and also doing this as like a fundraiser and having like the community support behind us, you know, felt like a good push for us to keep going at times that we wanted to quit. Definitely the support was part of our big, amazing moment and moments. Yeah.
So I'm going to put you guys on the spot, hiking together as a couple. I've seen a lot of folks do that. I've done that. And I know that sometimes that's very successful and very bonding. And sometimes that can really expose any underlying challenges in the relationship. How did it impact the both of you and your relationship?
I think every couple before they get engaged should go on a thru hike. You'll really decide if you're made for each other or not.
Yeah, true.
We've decided this. It should be just a prerequisite to marriage.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, for me, I got to go and spend all this time with my best friend. You know that there's going to be highs and lows. So going into this situation, that you know that you have to have patience for that other person, because it's not easy all the time. And we're both going to be grumpy. We're both going to be upset, but it's how you treat that person, your best friend, in those situations. And it worked out. We would be upset, not be having a good day, but we treat each other good.
Matt had lots of patience when I was having hard times. Definitely lots. And something I do like, Phil, about hiking as a couple versus like solo is that you have two people to do your daily work. So there is daily work, you know, in the morning, you're breaking down tent, you know, getting the breakfast ready. So we each had jobs we would do with our daily routine. So in the morning, he knew what he had to do, I knew. And same with the evening when we had to set up. So that was really nice. But definitely like being vulnerable with your partner and so broken down and know that they can lift you up and they're there for you is like everything.
Yes. So. I'm glad to hear that. I felt confident that would be the answer. You would be each other's throats on the Zoom call here.
Yes, now, and Phil, don't hold back. You've been on these kind of trips many, many times with your loved one. Are you going to add input?
I will just say what I said before. It'll either bring you closer together or drive you apart. It, in my experience, underscores anything that's essential to the relationship. So it magnifies your differences and it also magnifies your love. And so it really takes to the next level what's there. And I think Justine's right. It's in many ways more of a test of a relationship than a marriage. And so it's a great precursor to that. I want to follow up on that lead. It sounded like maybe you were dropping a hint. Are you engaged now?
Well, I think we have been engaged for a while.
Okay.
Yeah, there may be something down the road for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's kind of a soft announcement. We'll say you heard it here first. Let's come back to the hike. And we do want to talk about the Ethan Murray Fund. But while we're on the hike, what parts of the trail, besides the things we've talked about, were most challenging, most rewarding? Let's hear about some of the highlights, too.
Most challenging, probably the desert heat.
The desert heat,
the Middle Fork of the Salmon, some of the trail in there was pretty rough where the trail just kind of disappears.
Snakes. Don't forget about all the snakes in the subway drainage. They're everywhere. Just FYI, there's rattlers going off everywhere.
Yeah.
I'd say one of my two challenges too were the weight of our backpacks for sure, and for me, and the 2 days of burned areas where there was no trail. There was one point on that day where we started out and going over tons of burned down trees, no trails, going for hours. And I thought, I'm going to just see how many miles we've done. I guessed about 3. It'd been hours. We've been resting. Pick up my phone, look at my mileage, and it said 0.57. And I think at that point I realized like the severity of our, like, are we going to have enough food? We have 14 days. I don't know how many days on that one, but it was quite a few. And it made me nervous. I was like, okay, if we're not going to make time. So we did 6 miles, Phil and Julie, in 2 days.
I laugh. I've had those experiences. Congratulations. You're here.
Thank you. Yeah. So I'd say those were definitely our biggest challenges.
Yeah, I would say so.
So yeah, before we scare off any would-be ICT hikers, tell us about some of the highlights. What was the most fabulous moment on the trail?
Oh gosh, going through all the wilderness areas. Oh my gosh, Idaho, beautiful. I had no idea. Yes. I haven't been south of Coeur d'Alene. I don't know what I've been missing, but rafting down the Middle Fork of the Salmon. Are you kidding me? We got this opportunity to skip some fires and there was an injured doctor on one of the rafting trips, and we were asked if we would raft a boat down 5 days so this doctor could fly out and they could have their food. So we became friends with these great people, and that was definitely one of both of our highlights is people wait forever for permits for that, and here we are just jumping on our own raft.
Yeah. I was going to say, that sounded so unique. How do you hitchhike a raft ride? But you're helping them out too. That's fabulous.
Yes. Yeah. Well, they're feeding us at first because we kept running to them along the river. We camped with these same people 2 nights in a row by chance. And they had a ton of food. And they'd be like, here, have some bratwurst and some
potato salad. Here's some feta cheese with tomatoes.
You missed dinner, but here's some chocolate mousse.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you brought up food, because that, I think, weighs on every hiker's mind. You know, on the trail, they're thinking about their next town stop. Tell us about some of the towns along the way. What were some of the best towns you stayed in and best meals you had?
I loved Atlanta, Grangine, Stanley, Salmon, Kamei.
Gosh, they were all great. Let me tell you though, in Stanley, the Stanley Bakery is where it's at.
Oh yeah.
Our first like huge egg breakfast, and oh my gosh, the food there, and a real coffee and a latte and a cold drink. I would say that was definitely one of my highlights with Stanley. I've never been. And it's just a beautiful small town, really cold in the winter. We heard from the locals.
Yes.
And the locals were so great to help us out, because this was a year, because there were so many people outdoors in COVID, that all the hotels were booked everywhere we went. So we basically talked to the owners and became like a wait list for any cancellations. And they really worked with us. We ended up getting a motel, I think, every night in Stanley due to people not showing up. And they were like, come on, you guys. They'd be so excited to tell us we were going to have a shower and laundry for the night. It was great. It was great.
I'm glad to hear that worked out. I followed you on Facebook and was worried you'd get there and have no place to stay. But and I think, as we were saying, it's a fine line between a thru-hiker and a homeless person at times. But not all town experiences work out that well. Were there any that you'd skip? You don't have to name names. You can just describe the experience.
Say
they were
no,
good.
We like our Idaho.
We do. The smaller the town, kind of the better. Like for me, I liked Atlanta and Grangine, which really is just a lodge. But there's
hard to get to. Yeah,
hard to get to the small, the history behind the towns.
Atlanta was really great. Lots of mining history and cool buildings to tour. And
there's only what
38 people that live there year round.
Yeah.
Well, darn it, Stanley's hardly got anybody. So you guys are in some remote places.
Really remote. That's one of the wonderful things. And especially after hiking for a week or two with trail food. Yeah, I know that first egg breakfast is a big one. The first real cup of coffee.
Yes. And being able to eat two breakfasts instead of one.
Oh, yeah.
Because, and you're still hungry.
And the waitress would look at us like, you did order biscuits and gravy and this egg breakfast, right? And we're like, yep, each of us.
I will, and I don't think she'll mind, because she's shared this story before, reflect on the time that Deb and I were on the Appalachian Trail, and after getting through a big half-pound cheeseburger lunch somewhere, the waitress came over for dessert. Usually Deb would get peach pie, but she had a second cheeseburger for dessert.
That's awesome. Yeah,
I can relate. Food. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So, Deb, I hope you're listening. Let's pull all this together and give some would-be hikers a few quick tips on planning, logistics, gear, navigation. What are the things that you wish you had known before you started? I know you did a lot of research, but do you wish you had known that you found out along the way?
Well, I would say the desert section is pretty important because it can be hot and it can be very cold. But stashing your water, you can drive the whole length of it for the most part, the desert section. Get a four-wheel drive vehicle, stash your water when you can. And say you want to do 15 miles a day, then you stash that water every 15 miles and have it marked and, you know, on your GPS so you know right where it's at. It's super important, because if you can't find that water, there's nobody out there to help you. That water is so important, and there's no shade out there.
That
umbrella is a lifesaver. Our first shade tree was in 46 miles, and we ended up starting hiking overnight because to get away from the sun, but in the daytime there's no shade, so trying to sleep, it's a tricky one. And it doesn't just end at Hammett. It's still like another X amount of miles before you, it's 125 miles before you see that first pine tree where there's real shade. So
yeah, the desert, desert section, I'd say for sure start earlier than we did. We hit it during that heat wave. And there was one scary moment on the trail through the desert where I was going down. I was getting dehydrated. I started getting the chills. It's really hard to cool off in the desert because there is no shade, and we were running low on water. So we started doing every 15 minutes, we would take a sip till we got to our next water. And there was one point where I remember feeling like a half hour went by, and I asked him for a sip and he said, it's only been 5 minutes. And that's when he knew there was a problem. So we had some stuff in our first aid and he took good care of me, and I was able to make it to our water safely. But there has been people life flighted out of there. It's very serious. It's to be taken like very seriously. Yes. And I guess I just thought there would be shade, and there is not.
Yeah,
so
it's for the first part, it's knee-high sagebrush. And we were carrying 5 liters of water apiece. So,
and you may have done this, but I'll tell you from personal experience, when you create a water stash, don't use one big 2.5 gallon container. Use multiple ones, because if a needle from a cactus punctures the big container, you lose all that water. If it punctures only one of three, you've only lost a third of it. I can tell you from personal experience the difference that makes.
Oh, I bet. Yes, we did. We had 5 gallons of water in multiple containers at each stop. Yeah. So, and stashing water after Hammett is important.
Yeah. Yes. We had some trail angels offer to do that for us because we didn't foresee that. And we're glad we took them up on it. Not only did they say, go find the water, we left you coordinates, but we'll pick up the jugs. Mm. So it was super sweet. They ended up helping us a lot.
So tell us about the trail angels. Not everyone's familiar with that term.
A trail angel is someone that wants to help you or that just you run into. I mean, some people do it as a common thing that they're always looking out for hikers. And some you just run into the right person and they're like, oh my gosh, you guys look hot. Do you need a cold drink? We're like, yes. One of our best trail angels, one of my big highlights was definitely all the special little things people like that we found that just offer to do these beautiful things, make us breakfast. One of our biggest ones when we were getting home and it's very emotional because we were getting close. We were in Bonner County and we're walking up a reroute up the Idaho,
by the Idaho Club,
Lower Pack River. And we had a Bonner County Sheriff deputy pull in. And my first thought was, oh no, aren't we supposed to be walking the roads? And he rolled down his window and we had never met him before. His name was Darren Osborne and he was with his canine Leo. And he pulled right up next to us and said, oh my gosh, it's you guys. And Matt and I just looked at each other. We're like, yeah. He's like, I've been following your whole hike. I've been on your GPS. Oh my gosh, you guys just walked by my house. I can't believe you're here. And just like the excitement and his genuine like spirit of following us on this whole journey definitely was one of the most beautiful moments. And not only that, Phil and Julie, you wouldn't believe this, but towards the end of the trail, we're up in Upper Priest Lake, which if anyone knows is pretty remote. It's about 3 hours from Sandpoint. He drove up and found us up there and brought us pastries from Winter Ridge and went and got us hot lattes did a coffee order for us in Priest Lake and went and secured a camp spot for us at Lion's Head, even though they were closed.
Nice.
Oh my gosh, that is touching. What a good guy.
And that is trail magic. And it happens to everyone. Isn't it fabulous?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, at that point, the trail came to an end and you're home now. And what happens next, guys? I understand that feelings happen and it's hard to get back into life after you've completed something as really monumental as this.
It's been really hard. It's you're excited and you're happy, you know, for the things and you're grateful to have that hot water and your bed. But like the mental part of it is really hard. It's been really challenging.
It is. All the pressures of life kind of come back, the reality of it. You get used to living it's a hard life, but a basic life, without the outside world, and all the politics come back, COVID comes back for us.
The daily stressors, the stuff we have to manage as humans, you know, the busy schedules
but also being out of nature. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the transitions are hard. They're challenging. I know for a lot of folks who are long distance hikers, the end is so much of an excitement and a relief and a release, and yet there's so much sadness around. Okay, now it's over. What do I do next? Oh, this is what I do next. It's not like as much fun or exhilarating or rewarding as the simple act of walking every day. It's a hard transition. It's real.
It is. Yeah.
And I think maybe that's a segue too into. We all deal with mental health issues, and whether we want to admit it or not, we all deal with them from time to time. And you were doing this in part to help with that situation. And so let's delve a little more into the reasons for creating the Ethan Burry Fund and what you're doing with that.
Yeah, so Matt and I started the Ethan Burry Fund in March of this year. It is an infancy nonprofit. So of course there's lots of unknowns, but we have lots of passion. We are very excited to work on. We've definitely been throwing around some really cool ideas, goals of ours, how to raise awareness. We definitely want to keep the nonprofit nature-based. So we see more walks, more hikes, people joining in on these as well. And what we want to help with, Phil, is first, we want to talk to more mental health professionals. We want to talk to the police. We want to see where the need most is, because it does get overwhelming when you try to just find one area to help or one program. There's so many pieces to mental health. So just trying to get more information, see where the need is. This walk we did here, we wanted to work with NAMI Far North, which helps families in crisis here in Sandpoint. They have great group sessions you can go to, guest speakers. They help with a lot of programs here. And then the Bonner Homeless Transitions, we also wanted to donate to with this hike, who help a lot of homeless in our area, families, people, even just getting like furniture or a bed or, so they're very broad. But our big thing is just to keep focused on, you know, talking to more people. One of our goals down the road too, is to help maybe and pay for more de-escalation training for police. Again, more talking to, you know, the police here and seeing like where it's needed, what the cost is. So it being new, we have lots of ideas. We're very excited and passionate about it. We both have time for it. And so we just want to talk to more people in our community and really find out, you know, where the need, what they feel is most needed.
Yeah. I'm going to go back for just a moment because your experience with the county sheriff must have been pretty moving after the experience with your son and the way that that happened, that mental health, you know, someone in a mental health crisis, not in our state, but in Washington. And, you know, of course, he was killed. And then, of course, you had the experience, such a positive experience with the local sheriff. Would you like to talk about that, or we'll just leave it at that?
Yeah, no, Julie, that is, yeah, you definitely have a point there. When he drove away the first time that we saw him, I definitely was kind of in denial it even just happened, that there could be this policeman who would put himself out there like that, in knowing our story and believing in our cause. And it was very emotional. Like, I had a really hard morning. Matt remembers, like, I definitely cried and I definitely was feeling all sorts of things and, oh, yeah, and just really thinking about everything as a whole and what happened to Ethan. And, you know, but again, it's, you know, brings back to like police training and, you know, not every single, sorry, I'm going off a little.
Okay, take your time.
It's a hard moment. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
of course.
I think
but it was very special. That's, I guess, the bottom line is I felt, yes, it was very special for Darren to reach out. We have a plan to hike together, actually, now. So we're good to meet his wife.
Yeah.
I think it underscores the value of the crisis training that NAMI has provided for our community. I believe at this point, almost every county sheriff and deputy has been through that training, if not all of them. A good number of them. And certainly there's a cultural awareness here that may not exist in Spokane, at least on the same level. And so there's a proof that this training works. It has positive impacts beyond just the immediate crisis. It creates the awareness that helps the community address the challenges that we face. So I know that's one of your goals with the Ethan Murray Fund, is to raise that level of awareness. Tell us how that played into your hike. I'm not sure that we fully unpacked that at the beginning.
Well, it was great because the hike really gave us an opportunity to talk a lot with people on the trail about mental health. It came up quite a bit, you know, with different people. And so it was like being on the trail gave us a lot of time to, you know, bring more awareness about mental health, get people talking about it. Most people we ran into.
Yeah. So when we were hiking, because this is different than the PCT, we're in the middle of nowhere with a couple of backpacks and we don't have a boat or a car, depending on where we're at. So people would come up and ask us all the time and why we're doing this. And so we are able to share our mental health, spread the awareness just by that. And it was wonderful. And hearing other people's stories, there was a gentleman, Ben was his name, on the Clearwater River, and he was a firefighter, and he's able to express the importance of it because they lose the firefighters,
and suicide.
Through suicide, yeah, and such. So just our different conversations along the way. It was good.
Yeah. And then people were very compassionate and supportive about Ethan's story. You know, I felt like Ethan was there with me the whole hike, I have to say, so many times and beautiful moments and talking about him, definitely like keeping his story alive.
That's so important. And at the same time, you were also taking the opportunity for the hike to raise money for your infant program, as you called it. How did that go?
So we waited to share with you guys. You're going to hear it here first. So I just checked today. And not only did we make our goal, we're almost at 51,000. So
yay!
Super exciting.
Congratulations.
I know, we did our little happy dance and we're so excited for all the support.
And as they say, wait, there's more. This fundraising doesn't end here, correct?
Yes. So we have a silent auction slideshow presentation that will be at Tango Cafe here in Sandpoint on December 10th. We're going to open the doors at 5 and start the presentation at 5:30. And we're trying to make it COVID friendly as well. So we are going to offer Zoom for people that don't feel comfortable to come out, or an in-live version. We're meeting with a technical person on Monday to find out. So we will keep everyone updated through our website and social media platforms.
Yes. Nice.
That's great.
We'll mark your calendars.
Yes, very much so. Well, that's one way that people can help with the fund. What resources, well, that's a big way, but are there any others that they might help out? How folks might help out?
Yeah, so we have a, on our website, the ethanmurrayfund.org, we have a area where you can send us a message. And if you'd like to volunteer for any upcoming events or have ideas like what we talked about earlier of where people locally see the most need for resources that we can help raise, send us a message. We love to get messages. We love for you to share your story. You know, whenever we have a radio show like this or a news article come up, a lot of people reach out to us and share stories and that resonate, or, you know, definitely we had someone reach out from our last news show, wants to help with grant writing. So if there's a skill and you feel passionate about this project, we'd love to have you on board. Like I said, Matt and I have never done anything like this before. We just have a lot of passion around it and we want to give it our all. So, and come to our fundraiser, of course. Yeah.
So plans for another hike, or are you one and done?
Nope, we're planning.
Justine said, I heard, so I do have to share this. Probably about a month into the hike, or plus, it was a really hard day and I had stopped and I just said to her, I am so happy this is your idea and not mine. And, you know, but, and so from there on, she was done. And then it wasn't until we got home until she's like, I'm ready to go back again.
Yeah.
She wants to, so we will be hiking again. We will do another through hike.
Yeah. We're looking at a couple. We're looking at the John Muir Trail.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the John Muir Trail. And the Canadian Appalachian Trail, which I just found from a film in the Banff Mountain Film Festival this year that sparked my interest.
Yeah,
those are both fabulous. And there are so many, many trails out there. We can talk off camera, off mic later on, but it sounds like you already have the bug and are looking around at some wonderful options.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, as we come to a close, are there resources for people needing help with mental health, et cetera, that you might recommend?
Yeah. And of course, I'm not a professional, but the ones that I think are the best resources in our area, and they are easily found online or in your phone book and your phone, is NAMI Far North, which helps with families and people that struggle for mental illness. Bonner Homeless Transitions is also another great resource, and Kootenai Health and Coeur d'Alene is also a good resource in the crisis center.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a 24-hour crisis center. It's free. Anyone can walk in. It's in Coeur d'Alene, right next to Kootenai Health. And a lot of people access that. And it's a great program.
Excellent. So as we wrap up, any final thoughts you'd like to share with our listening audience?
I would just say, for me, my big thing is breaking the stigma around mental health. You know, it's very important to talk about it. We, you know, in this world, we all have a struggle. And the more we can talk about it, the more people will feel like they can reach out and get help. Yes. So that's a big one for us.
I just would like to thank everybody that helped us make this trip happen. It was a lot of people. And to thank everyone that has donated and encouraged us.
All the support was unreal.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. Way to go, guys.
Yeah. That about wraps up another show, Julie. And so if someone tuned in midway and wants to hear the entire interview, they can go to krfy.org and listen to the podcast. It should be available sometime later in the day that this airs. And we welcome our guests to tune in live every Tuesday morning at 8 a.m. for Community Conversations morning shows with Phil and Julie, 88.5 FM, KRFY.